accession number 29556, Mr. Brian Haskell Thomas, Real 2. Now, take me through the basic training then you had. This is, you know, as an ordinary seaman, as a recruit at HMS Collingwood. What do you remember of your training there?
Marching and rifle drill. Marching and rifle drill gets you in the military mind of obeying orders. And it worked very well.
You saw the point of it,
yes,
right from
absolutely.
The start.
And then
you enjoy it, because some people do enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, but it was 10 weeks training.
No, and the drill.
The drill. Oh, yes, yes.
You had no problems?
None. Well, we had drill in the Sea Cadets.
Now, what else were you learning?
Seamanship.
Now, you know all that, presumably.
Yeah. That's why they made me boss of this little group of 18-year-olds, of which I was one.
Was there anything different about the way the Navy did it to HMS?
Oh, no. No, very straightforward.
What else were you learning?
I went on a course to become an anti-aircraft gunner.
Now tell me that. What gun were you trained on?
A 2-pounder pom-pom.
Do you remember much about it?
Oh, yes. No. Yes.
Tell us that. What was a gun drill? Because we're not very familiar with a 2-pounder pom-pom.
Every Navy ship in my time at sea had them, and then they also had Bofors, which is the Swedish one.
It's not the Oerlikon, is it?
No, the Oerlikon is and the Bofors were the two Swedish ones. The Oerlikon came along a little later.
But
the 2-pounder pom-pom, yes.
Tell me about the gun. What was the gun drill like on it?
Well, there were three people on it. A gun layer, a gun trainer, and an ammunition loader, because it has a big belt. It was known as a Chicago piano. I don't know why, but it seemed to chatter around. And one of its pieces of equipment was a wooden mallet, because it was prone to stopping when you didn't want it to. And the drill was to thump it with this wooden mallet, and the gun started to fire again. But it.
And what did you think of it as a gun?
Well, quite accurate.
And I presume you'd learn on all the three positions, you'd be able to do all of them.
Absolutely.
And do you practice any firing at targets?
Oh, yes, yes.
What targets? Ground-based or towed?
Ground-based, normally, but eventually towed.
And how accurate were you on it?
Well, quite accurate when you got the point. Particularly firing at aircraft, you had to aim at where it's going to be, not where it is.
And they taught you that?
Oh, yes, yes.
The sights, was there any assistance in...
There's a thing called aim off, and you've got the feeling that how to do that. And practice.
A feeling rather than a sight thing.
Yes,
the sight
yes,
didn't
right.
allow for you. You allow for it.
Indeed, yes. And, of course, each belt of ammunition contained the odd tracer bullet, so you could see where they were going. A lot of thought went into this.
So you did drill, seamanship, pom-pom training, 2-pounder.
Yeah.
Anything else you were doing at HMS Collingwood?
Well, a lot of marching about, but that's all really. It was just a 10-week course to get people into the service and the service way of thinking.
Now, what about, how did you get on with the chaps in your group, given that you were in charge of it and you were 18 and you had a couple of ex-convicts? Tell me how you got on.
I had difficulties with the ex-convicts. They wouldn't do what they were supposed to do and be where they were supposed to be. And in the end, the instructor said to me, well, you've really got to make an example of them. Put them on a charge. And I did. But they understood it, strangely enough, and said, OK, we'll be good boys in future.
So you just had to stand up to them?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy the responsibility? I know it's no rank, but it's still...
No. Well, I think so. It helps you to develop. And then when I did my...
What did you think of the instructors there as compared to...
Oh,
the
very good.
Had it better or worse than the Worcester ones?
Oh, better. I mean, they were chaps, NCOs with 30 years service in the Navy. So, you know, it was their religion, really. Well, I found that out when I went on my anti-aircraft course at Whale Island.
That's where
we were all ambling across the bridge to the island. There was a stentorian voice shouted, double! You dabble everywhere here. You double mark time and you clean your teeth.
So you did the £2 a pom-pom at Whale Island, HMS Excellent.
Yeah. And, of course, they had a punishment there which worked very well. If you got out of line, you were told to pick up that four-inch shell, take it to an instructor next door. And, of course, Whale Island Gunnery School, a crescent of instruction rooms. Oh, no, I don't want it. Take it to the next chap. You ended up walking around half the island. You didn't do it again.
You think the punishments were well thought out?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You were there, what, 10 weeks, so September to December. Were you still there at Christmas, or had you left at Christmas?
No, I left. I was on a destroyer, Hunt-class destroyer.
Was that your next part? When did you go to the Hunt-class destroyer?
Oh, before Christmas, 41.
So, December-ish.
Hmm.
Now, what? Just before we finish with HMS Club, was there any assessment there, any exams or practicals there that you had?
Well, I came top of all the subjects.
How were you assessed?
Well, tests and the instructors monitoring your progress. You had one instructor looking after you the whole time, and occasionally you went to other more specific and technical chaps for a talk. But it was quite interesting.
Now, you weren't being distracted here, then?
No. Well, I was interested.
But you've been interested at Worcester, but you've been distracted as well.
Oh, yeah.
So the difference was the lack of the music.
Absolutely, yes.
There was no band, no music.
Oh, there was a Royal Marine band.
Were you in it?
No. They are very particular who they take, the Royal Marines.
So you weren't being distracted?
No.
Now, anything else about Collingwood before we leave there?
No, I think it was a very, very well run base, training base. An enormous number of people went through there. We did have one problem when we were all on parade and a German aircraft came across and dropped a stick of bombs across the parade ground. We just lay flat and crossed our fingers.
Were there any casualties, or were you lucky?
There are some casualties, but we were lucky. I mean, who knows?
Now, so what happened next then? Were you posted straight to the destroyer?
As an anti-aircraft gunner. And we had a £2 a pom-pom on the bow of the ship.
We don't know what ship it is yet. It's our class destroyer. Which one?
Cottesmore. Cottesmore, Cottesmore. Cottesmore.
HMS Cottesmore.
Hunt class destroyer. They're all named after Hunt.
And you went aboard her in what, December?
Yeah.
And you were an anti-aircraft gunner.
Yeah.
On the £2 a pom-pom.
Yeah.
Now, what were your first impressions? Where did you join her?
I think it was Portsmouth. Oh no, beg your pardon, Chatham. Because we were in the 21st Destroyer Flotilla based in Chatham and Sheerness.
That's where you were based then?
Working out of the Medway and the Thames to escort convoys up the North Sea and through the English Channel.
Now, what was your first impression when you joined HMS Cottesmore as a Hunt class destroyer? Mm. What did you think of it?
Well, quite a smart little ship. 980 tons, with about 170 people on board, because we had.
Were they well designed? I mean, in a way, you're only an ordinary seaman at this time, but was it a ship that looked fit for purpose?
Oh yes, yes. Its only drawback was it didn't have a very long endurance.
Well designed, otherwise.
Oh yes.
What was its armament?
We had two twin turrets with two 4-inch guns. Then we had pom-poms, Oerlikons, but no torpedoes.
None at all?
No. It was quite small, about 980 tons, and I suppose about 260 feet long.
Now, what was your mess deck like? Where was it for a start?
In the bow of the ship. The ships are designed so
which
the
one?
Sailors are the last people they think of.
So what was it like? Describe the mess deck on the Hudson Pond, if you can.
Well, it was crowded. Very tight storage for all your kit, just one locker. And the hammock places were allocated, and you were not allowed to move your hammock around. That's your place. And sometimes people would creep in after you'd slung your hammock and turn it upside down. So when you got in it, it turned itself the right way up. You got thrown out. But, you know, tricks go on everywhere.
And what about the hammock? We haven't mentioned that. I mean, how did you find sleeping in the hammock?
Oh, very, very good.
What is the beauty of all that? I mean, because
it sways with the ship. Whereas in a bunk, you get rolled around and you have to put a board in to stop yourself falling out. Very, very comfortable.
Warm enough?
Oh, yes, yes. You had a thing called a stretcher at the head end, a rope, to make it a bit wider where your head is. And it worked very well.
And did you have the cartoon moments when you first got used to falling through the other end?
Oh, absolutely, yes, yes.
So everybody does do that.
You always get an audience when the first chap comes and swings his hammock for the first time. But you get used to it.
It's just a knack.
Absolutely.
A knack?
Yeah.
Or is it just
you
used to it?
Yes, you get used to it. You know what you have to do, what you don't have to do. And, of course, when you take it down, you tie it like a sausage. And you have to have 7 turns up right down the length of the hammock so that they all look absolutely the same. The Navy loves things which are absolutely the same.
Now, so what was your typical day's routine like then? On the ship.
Well, at sea. We were allocated into watches.
Obviously we know what the watch, but can you explain to people who don't know what the watch system is, how it works, and what hours it operates? Because a lot of people don't understand it.
Well, they divide the ship's company into 3 watches normally. Red, white and blue, strangely enough. And depending what you're doing at sea, you usually have 4 hours on watch and then 8 hours off. But that 8 hours also is set up to enable you to man the ship and maintain it, swabbing the decks, cleaning all the equipment, checking all the gear, lifeboats, life rafts, and all the various things that are necessary to the well-being and continuation of the ship's voyage. And of course, you get jobs as lookouts as well.
So take me through a typical day then. Pick a watch at sea. We'll talk about the convoys a bit more. So what would you have to do when you were, because you're an ordinary seaman.
Yeah, yeah.
So how would your day start? So say you're on the early watch.
Well, if you're on the middle, which is from midnight to 4, somebody comes and rudely awakes you 5 minutes before. You usually, particularly at sea, you don't put your pyjamas on. Then you go up and take your position, whether it's a lookout or actually on watch on your gun. And the day goes like that. You have to be sharp, not allowed to sleep, which is fair enough. And then if you go to action stations, everybody is at their appointed places.
Now, what was action stations for you on that ship?
The 2-pounder pom-pom on the forecastle, right in the bow of the ship. It was used to have a go at E-boats, which are the German equivalent of motor torpedo boats, who had a knack of securing to a buoy in the North Sea. And then we'd pick that up on our primitive radar. Oh, that's buoy number E6. Then it would suddenly get underway at 50 knots.
So... You'd be on. So that when you were on watch, you'd be on your you'd be on your £2 a gun anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you were allocated to another gun to help somebody else. Sometimes.
What about cleaning the ship and that sort of routine?
Well, that was everybody had to do. That.
Tell me about cleaning the ship. Yeah. I mean, what was your part in that?
Well, you had to clean all the equipment on the gun. Fortunately, all the brass work had been painted out because that could reflect on the sea. So we didn't have any brass work. Was cleaning the decks, cleaning the mess decks, and.
How would you clean it? Would you sluice it down or what? Or scrub it?
Oh yes, scrub it, disinfect it, especially the mess deck tables, which were wooden.
And was this done every day?
Oh yes.
And which watch would do it? The
one that's they usually do these sort of jobs in daytime, so that the people who just come off watch wouldn't be disturbed by people thundering around in the mess deck.
Now tell me what a typical so you're with 21st Destroyer Flotilla.
Yeah.
Based at Chatham or Sheerness.
Yeah.
What was the role of the convoy of the destroyer flotilla and your ship? It was obviously guarding the East Coast convoys.
Yes, yes.
Tell me about the East Coast convoys and how you guarded them.
Well, the flotilla of ships, I think we were about five, were designated tasks by the captain of the flotilla. And we were spread around various parts of the vulnerable parts of the convoy. We used to make sure the...
So you'd all go out together?
Yeah. And we'd test our guns as we went out on a wreck that was lying off Sheerness. We gave up doing that when we found out it was full of ammunition. Still
the
there.
That's the one that's still
there.
Did you really used to shoot at it?
Yeah, well, their masts were sticking out of the water. And nobody told us.
Do you know the name of that ship? That's just
it'll come to me suddenly.
So that's a fairly interesting start to...
Absolutely, yeah.
Because that could have blown up.
I know. And that would really, if it blows up now, I believe it would be a terrible accident in the area.
Tested your guns, then what? Where would the convoy make up? In the Thames, in the estuary?
Thames estuary, yes, yes. And we'd either go up the North Sea or down. Sometimes we're calling it Immingham. My memory of Immingham is every building is either a fish and chip shop or a pub.
What was the sort of routine on the convoy? You'd be just, would you maintain station on one
side? Oh yes, yes, yes. That's right, yes.
Now, what were the threats then? You mentioned Evo. Tell me a bit more about the E-boat threat.
Well, they were very, very fast boats, very streamlined. The guns that they had would sort of go down like a lift into the hull when they were speeding along, then they'd come up again, but very fast. And they would loiter on a buoy, as I mentioned.
Now the boys were armed with? Huh?
Very heavy machine guns and torpedoes.
Now, did they pose a threat to a destroyer like yourself?
Oh, certainly they did, yes, yes.
Because it would strike me that actually, you know, they could sink you quite easily.
Yeah, their main mistake was the one made by the U-boats. They used to talk to each other on the radio. We would hear them. And we'd hear somebody shout in German, "Prepare to shoot!" Aye, aye. And you keep a lookout and go to action stations.
So that was a very key point then.
Yes.
They do all this hiding behind a buoy.
That's right, yeah.
And then ruin it by...
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the U-boats radio themselves to death, really, in the end.
So, the E-boat, now, what were the E-boat tactics? Would there be more than one of them?
Yes, there'd be a group. Like our motor torpedo boats used to go out in a flotilla. And they were doing the same thing the other side of the channel.
Now, how did you counter the E-boat threat? It strikes me it must have been quite a difficult target to hit.
That's right. Well, this is why we had this bow chaser, which is the old Nelsonian name for this weapon we had in the bow of the ship. It got hit one night, and two of my colleagues were wounded.
What happened? Tell us the story.
The captain said, "Why aren't you firing?" I said, "There's only me left."
So what happened to the gun? I mean,
well, a shell from the E-boat hit the very strong gun shield, and it just disintegrated. It was just the shrapnel that injured the two sailors. But there was not a dent in the gun shield, which says a lot for the steel.
And you were the only one not wounded. There's three of you there. Mm. So you were the only one not wounded.
Yeah.
And hence your remark to the Could you see what you were firing at?
Oh, yes. The luminescence in the water when they're going very fast. Like when you get St. Elmo's fire on the bridge, or above the bridge.
And did you ever hit them?
Oh, yes. Mm.
Any successes in sinking?
Yeah. Two or three. But you couldn't stop to pick any sailors up, because your plan was to get the convoy to where it's supposed to go.
So that's one threat. Unless anything else about the E-boats, but the others, any other threats? I suppose submarine and air.
Oh, aircraft, yes.
Now, what was the nature of the aircraft? Was that Stukas or was it other things?
Not usually Stukas, but Messerschmitt.
Was it bombing or strafing?
Bit of each, really.
And what was a typical German air attack like on those East Coast? What would happen?
Well, it passed off very quickly, because they were a bit fuel short all the time in those early days. Endurance was quite short, as were our aircraft.
So they didn't have long above you?
No. It's just a quick thump and off they go.
Would you fire at them, or was your two-pounder more directed at bow chasing?
We'd use the 4-inch guns, because they could elevate quite a long way. But really, they go so fast. But then with the whole group firing, you sometimes got a hit, and the aircraft went in the sea.
Did you have a system? Because as I understand it, barrage fire was one of the big things, because not hitting the plane, but putting a barrage.
That's right,
through. Now, had you that sort of thinking developed? I mean, would the ships all put up a barrage, or were they still at that stage just aiming at the aircraft, which is very different?
That's right, yeah.
So which was it?
Just aiming at the aircraft, really.
So, not...
Because the convoys were quite big and a lot of well spread out, so the five destroyers were not all bunched together.
So the
captain makes a decision whether it's worth firing or hold your ammunition in until they come closer.
So the AA fire from the ships was, at that stage, was pretty ineffective.
Yeah.
So that's the air. Did you suffer a lot of losses from air attacks on the convoy?
No.
What about submarines? Did they attack?
Early days. No. Well, they didn't attack so much in those days. They were more in the Atlantic, the western approaches to the English Channel.
So that was one thing you weren't getting?
Yeah. They had 34 of them at sea in August 1939.
Now, so what happened next then? You're sailing up. Where would you stop? Was it just at every port to drop off ships, or was it just...
We'd sometimes stop at Imimum, or normally go up to Moville in the northeast of Scotland.
Moville?
Yeah. Moville. Sounds more French, doesn't it?
I've never heard of that destination. So that was the usual destination, was it?
Yeah. Then it was used to... when we started the early Russian convoys.
Now, what were you dropping off? What was being carried up the East Coast? Well, from London up there, anyway. What exactly was on the ships, as opposed to the escorts?
Well, there'd be fuel from the oil refineries. And products from the south to go to the north, and when you turn around and come back, you're bringing back from the north.
So what would you bring back? Coal?
Oh yes, coal, very important. And vehicles.
Now, what proportion of ships would get through safely? I mean, what was your casualty rate?
fairly low at that time, because neither side had really got their act completely together.
Now, what was it like when you went into port like Immingham or Mobile? I mean, what would you do when you went ashore?
Well, if we were there overnight, some of the sailors would be allowed to go to a pub.
Would you?
No, I didn't.
Too young or didn't want to?
Didn't want to, but there's a long story about my association with alcohol to come later.
Fair enough, we'll look forward to that. So, you didn't go ashore?
Well, I used to go out have fish and chips with the lads.
Now, how did you get on with the other lads?
Very well.
You were a CW candidate, and they're not.
That's right.
You're all ordinary seamen. Oh, well, some of them will be able to, but how did you get on with them?
Well, we were looked at in somewhat a suspicious manner. But, you know, that's the way they just recognise you as one of the people until you're called up to go and to King Alfred to do your commission
work. So they were
friendly
and perfectly nice to you.
And of course we were too busy and too tired to have any animosity.
Even on these comments, fatigue was a problem.
Yes.
So tell us about, because obviously that's going to be a theme that we develop, because I mean, it gets worse.
Absolutely, yeah.
But how tired would you get on the East Coast comments? What problems did you as a young and inexperienced lad have with fatigue?
Well, the main difficulty is always trying to keep your eyes open. It was helped by the occasional bang that went off, but you were on watch for a minimum of 4 hours, but if you're at action stations, you could be there for 8 hours or more until you've done whatever the action station required you to do.
Now, I can understand that's tiring and the rest of it, difficult keeping your eyes open, but was this enough to cause what the sort of fatigue that develops on Arctic and Atlantic, whereby you know you're absolutely exhausted and you start seeing things
not being able to
concentrate properly.
Yeah, it was, because the North Sea can be quite vicious in terms of weather.
Well, that's another point.
I mean, weather is really a very fatiguing thing. I always say that during the war there were three protagonists: the Allied navies, the Kriegsmarine, and the weather, which wasn't on anybody's side.
What was the weather like in the North Sea?
Oh, pretty grim.
How bad? What was it storm like?
Well, the main problem was trying to keep the convoy in station, and sometimes you get a merchant ship which broke down, and you had to go and tow it, or do something else.
How did your ship stand up to heavy seas? Because some destroyers get pretty wet underneath.
Especially the ones built in 1917, like I was at sea on the day war broke out.
But what about the Hunt? I mean, what about the Hunt class?
They're not too bad. We did have stabilisers, but they were to steady the ship when you were firing the guns.
So there was a fair bit of rolling.
The thing that cruise ships have today, stabilisers, still being built by the same people who built the stabilisers in both the ships I was in.
So that was more about the guns. So the ship would roll.
Oh, yes.
Would it pitch as well?
Oh, yes. Every new sailor who arrived on a ship was told that ships roll. When it does, your instinct makes you thrust out your hand to grab something, and you'll find it's either red hot, freshly painted, or comes away in your hand. And you have to have one hand for yourself and one for the ship.
Now, did you ever suffer from seasickness in these early days?
No.
So that was just not something you had?
No. That came later.
Anything else about your time? I mean, you were doing that for December 41.
Yeah.
Any particular incidents or stories you remember?
When we were cleaning these for a pom-pom one day, one of my colleagues leant on the firing lever and didn't realise that it was copped, and so there was a salvo of 2-pounder pom-pom bursting over Sheerness. The captain rushed out of the cabin and shouted to nobody in particular, "Find out why!" and then went back into his cabin.
Was it trouble? I presume there would be trouble about that.
Well, the chap who did it got to, I think, 2 weeks leave stopped. Of chore leave, that is. But I think captains of the Royal Navy were not the martinets that you see portrayed in the stories about Captain Bligh and so on.